You're listening to Does Not Compute on the Spec Network. We appreciate you tuning in. If you enjoy the show, please remember to rate and or review us on iTunes. It just takes a minute and is one of the best ways to help spread the word about Does Not Compute.
I had this great idea last night to go to the gym at like 10 p.m. Yeah, so I took my pre-workout, which is loaded with caffeine, I'm sure. Got all drugged up, went to the gym, and didn't sleep until almost 4, which has me all screwed up.
That sounds miserable.
Yeah, so I'm just kind of feisty today, and I was scrolling through Reddit, as I do sometimes, my pizza Reddit and my oddly satisfying Reddit and my Destiny Reddit, and I saw a post talking about how, so basically, if you're not familiar with Destiny, there's a PvP play mode called the trials basically, and it's the most competitive. And so now there are people, so before you could actually pay players to kind of rush you through it, so you get on a team with really good people, if you pay them, and they'll take you through so you can get, you know, some nice drops. And so now what's happening is there's a bunch of cheaters where they're actually DDoSing the opposing team.
Oh my
God.
Which
is nuts, right? I don't know how they're doing it, but they're like literally DDoSing the people's home networks.
Botnets have gotten way too easy to come by. It's kind of terrifying. I mean, there was a whole thing with the yeah. Dyne outage, what, like a week ago or so at this point?
Yeah, yeah, which is why I kind of even brought that up, because it's just, it's everywhere, you know? Just crazy. Just
any script kiddie can get their own botnet now. We have this internet of things we've built. It's coming back to haunt us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that, and I think what's even worse is that, and I don't know why I'm surprised by this, but manufacturers aren't taking response. I guess one is, I'll have to find that news article that I read, but one of the companies that was had some products that were involved in the Dyne attack did a recall on all of their cameras. I think it was like a webcam maker. And basically the password to the firmware was hardwired into the cameras. So there's nothing they could do about it. All they could do is recall the cameras to be able to fix that. And I don't know why I'm not surprised that people are hard coding firmware, like admin passwords into the firmware, but it just blows my mind that it seems like there just needs to be some more responsibility taken, or responsibility is not the right word. Maybe just like pride in doing things well. You know, I'm sure it saved them money somehow, hard coding this stuff in, you know, but still that's crazy. That's crazy.
That seems like such a basic thing if you're building a product that is connected to the internet, right? No, I guess not. Apparently it's not such a basic thing.
Yeah. As a programmer, I think to myself, like, what, you know, how, what kind of things would I do, or what kind of things do I notice in the web app world that kind of can draw comparisons to that, you know, just people cutting corners, people doing things just not the right way because it takes more time, energy, and money. And I mean, I'll be honest, like, we've been talking about like Vue 2 and Redux and React and all that lately, and I'm getting worn down a little bit because it's just so much more work, and not that that's a bad thing. It's just a lot more. And I guess like I'm remembering the old days where I could build something that was pretty cool, relatively simply. And now there's so many more hoops to jump through to do it well and do it right.
Yeah. I'm going through the exact same thing. Before we started recording, we were actually talking about this a little bit, and I'm actually working on my first app with Vue 2 in it right now. And I'm struggling a lot with stuff like missing sync. And I understand, I mean, we've talked about Flux and Redux and Vuex and all that, that whole ecosystem. And we understand, I think both of us understand, like, why that's great and what is so useful about it. But I do still miss sync a lot in some cases. Like, in this particular instance, I've got basically an array of objects, and I just want a component for each object. And I want, when you update one of those components, a text field or whatever in that component, it just updates the main object that's just a JSON blob that I can just send to a server. And in Vue 1, that was just literally adding .sync to my components, to my props. and now in Vue 2, right, it's like, okay, I guess I have to add in Vuex, which is fine. I'll just, you know, add that to my bower or whatever, and then it's there. Then I have access to it, and it's like, okay, now I need to set up a module for this type of thing, and I need to create the methods for being able to mutate each object, and then I have this global state, and it's like I'm actually just trying to make a form a little bit more usable, and now I have to write 100 something lines of code probably in order to do that in the quote unquote correct way.
Yeah, totally. And I think what kind of compounds that, not really frustration, but it just kind of, it's kind of like if you're carrying the groceries up the stairs and you've already had a long day and you just kind of like drop a bag and you really don't want to go back and pick it up. Like, you know, you have to go get your stuff because you paid for it.
The bag with the eggs rips.
Yeah. My Pop-Tart bag almost ripped earlier. It would have been really sad.
Wait, your Pop-Tart bag? What?
Yeah. The cashier put my box of Pop-Tarts. I had two boxes of Pop-Tarts and she put them in a plastic bag, and Pop-Tarts obviously have sharp corners on the boxes, and it started tearing and I got scared.
What's a plastic bag?
Right.
California.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even have to pay for it, Paul. They just gave it to me.
That's crazy.
In fact, they gave me a plastic bag and gave me a discount for bringing other bags. I just got some more food than I was hungry when I went shopping. Okay. So,
so you got the bag discount and you got plastic bags. Oh,
correct.
My goodness.
Correct.
Wow.
Yes.
What a life.
Yes. But I think what compounds that feeling of just kind of like, I don't want to do this, is that a lot of the stuff that we're putting work into is not our day job kind of stuff. So we're already worn down a little bit from just kind of working all day, making decisions, doing stuff. And then you come and you come in onto a side project that you're stoked to work on. And then you have a bunch of hoops to jump through, and it makes it a lot harder to be productive on them.
Well, I guess a lot of it for me isn't even so much that. It's just that I felt like for at least some cases, sync kind of solved this problem set already, and it already existed and now it's gone, and I just kind of miss it. And again, I mean, I get why centralized state management is better. It is objectively better for large scale things. But when you're doing something really simple, when you're trying to create something that has an actual known upper bound to the complexity, I feel like being able to make that choice of whether or not a global store makes sense for an individual case is something that, I don't know, maybe that should be left to the developer. In this case, it certainly feels like it should be.
Yeah, I can totally see that. I can totally see that. It's just, it's just one of those things where, like you said, it's objectively better. I know why central state is important, and I know why kind of locking that down is important, especially in the context of a team, multiple developers and all that stuff. But, yeah, I feel, I don't know. It's just the culture right now, the climate right now is like, if that were left up to developer, I feel like people would be firing shots and it would be negative publicity, which really sucks. Not that it's all about publicity at all.
Well, but publicity affects adoption. I mean, that's just the reality. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of it's very similar to what's happened over the last year or so with SaaS. People are saying, you know, never use SaaS because features can be abused. That means that you just should never use it. And I'm just not sure that those kind of arguments seem more than a little bit reductive to me.
They're completely reductive. And in fact, when you say stuff like, or when you hear people say stuff like, oh, SaaS is antiquated and you shouldn't use it because it does bad things. Well, what people end up saying is that it produces bad code, which is entirely untrue. Entirely untrue. But even worse than that is that the developers that are still using those technologies get labeled antiquated, and developers that produce bad code as well, which is insane because it's not true either. It's just not true. But that's where we're at in the world today, Paul.
I guess for me, one of the big reasons that the SaaS argument doesn't really hold any water is because you can actually do all of these new CSS techniques. You can have single classes that don't get overridden. You can do all this stuff, but you can actually just generate it using more concise code. And to me, I think that that's like pretty powerful and not, even if you do want to look at your CSS in a different way, if you don't want to do component-based CSS anymore, if you want to move towards utility classes or whatever you want to call it, functional CSS, I guess the expression would be throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Just because you've decided that this one thing is bad doesn't mean that you have to entirely change your whole tool set. I actually, usually in projects now, when I'm doing a fresh CSS build out, I will write a lot of SAS files that go in and they generate utility classes for me to use throughout the app, but I'm able to do that instead of having to write everything out. I can just write it in SAS, and that's fine. And it doesn't mean that the methodology itself is bad. It doesn't mean that the language itself is useless anymore. And it just, I guess it just kind of baffles me when people talk like that.
Yeah. I actually did the same thing for this recent project where I was using their, so this company had an internal kind of style guide CSS setup, but they didn't have a number of classes to do some things that I need to do. So they're using Sass. So instead I just wrote a function, and one function generated everything I needed, including within all of their setup breakpoints using variables and all that. But what's even more is that you can actually just make things more flexible. So if you are doing a functional based setup, if you're having your CSS generated via Sass functions or something, you could, if the designer says, oh, we're going to change these grids, you change a number. If you have it set up right and you're using variables, you change a number and you're good to go. You know?
Yeah. And I suppose the argument would actually be that you can use, you know, CSS Next, CSS 4, whatever they're calling it these days. And it has some of the good parts of Sass, but without some of the parts that people dislike. And that's also completely valid. But for me, it really comes down to, is that actually going to save me time? Is that actually going to make my life better over just using the technology I already know and being a bit more judicious about how I use it? And so far,
judicious.
So far, at least for me, in the projects I've been working on, the answer is no. And I just don't really see any reason. I can change my methodologies without having to change my entire tool set.
I like what you just said there. You can change your methodologies without changing your entire tool set. Because you know what, Paul, your tool set doesn't dictate how you need to write your code. I mean, it can influence that, but it doesn't dictate it, which I think is great. And like you said, throwing the baby out with the bathwater, it's totally true, because that, it just seems to happen every time something comes out. Or it's like those articles, X considered harmful, thing considered harmful. I go out of my way to not click on those anymore. But it feels a lot like that to me. Like, Sass considered harmful because there's a feature that you could use if you wanted to, or one of your developers could use if they wanted to. But again, it comes down to something we've talked about before, and that really just comes down to education and having, you know, if you're working on a team, you should have guidelines. You should have style guides that your developers follow. You know, the team you're working with should be educated. You should put some time into that to make sure that people aren't abusing features. And a lot of times I think that people opt for just removing those features altogether because it saves time and saves a little energy and frustration. And I don't know. I guess I tend to err on the side of spending more time with people on your team. If I'm a lead developer, I would rather spend more time educating people than just removing tools that they can use, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that does make a lot of sense. So I guess for me, it just comes back to what it kind of always seems to come back to, which is that I do really like a lot of these new tools. I do really like a lot of these new techniques that are out there in the web right now. I think it's great that we're moving things forward and things are growing and changing. But there is still so much to be said for a tool set that you know and really like, and that you can be comfortable and super productive with.
Yeah, the feeling where you're just productive and you know you're being productive, you're just killing it, is one of the best feelings. And I think for me, in the period that I am in right now with my programming journey, I think it's kind of hard for me to hit that because I am in a period of extreme growth, and I feel like I've been in that period for quite a while now. Whereas before, I feel like that stressful period of growth didn't last quite as long. It seems like more and more recently, it's lasting longer and longer. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. That just means that I'm going through the desert, so to speak, in my journey of programming. But yeah, I just want that feeling. You know what I mean? I just want that feeling of like, man, I knocked that out of the park, and just feel like I was really productive.
Yeah. And I mean, there's also something to be said for the nice feeling of learning new technologies, learning these new techniques, which does feel great, but oftentimes can be at odds with being productive, with actually getting stuff done. And it's so easy. The tools come out and change at just such a rapid clip at this point that you could 100% just be learning new tools every single day and never really accomplish anything. And it's easy to want to do that because it's fun to learn new tools. Everybody enjoys learning new stuff. Everybody enjoys feeling like they're on the bleeding edge. But man, right now, I just feel personally like I want to slow down for a little bit and just kind of use tools I'm super happy with and super comfortable with and just make some really cool stuff. Because that's always, programming for me has always been more about the end result. It's just a means to an end. I don't really care about programming
right
for its own sake. I find it interesting, But really what I'm here to do is I'm not here to make friends. What I'm here to do is I just want to make cool stuff. That's really been my goal
right
since before I even learned programming. It's what got me into it in the first place. It's just like I have this idea for a thing. How do I do that? And the tooling exists only to help me make the thing. I'm not someone personally who gets super into tools, who gets really into like tools for their own sake. I like tools if they help me make things quickly and easily. And so I don't know. I'm just trying to refocus myself on that a little bit, on the end result more than the journey.
I think that was one of the first things you taught me, though, when I first started working for you, was that your tools only matter in as much as they save you time and they allow you to be productive and they allow you to produce something that, you know, is of quality. And as soon as you start swapping stuff out too quickly, then even if the tools are quality, you can't produce quality stuff because you don't know your tools well enough. It's hard to maintain that level of quality when there's just a constant state of flux, you know? So, no pun intended, no shots intended. Someone's going to come at me with a Medium article.
A think piece.
Hot. But I didn't mean it. A think piece. But yeah, that's, I don't know. I feel like I'm trying to get back to that. And I guess, you know, the more that I learn Redux and Vuex and all that stuff, I will feel that feeling of being productive again. But yeah, it's just one of those things where you kind of have to go through it, you know? And that's where I'm at. You know, I'm working on a few side projects. I redid my site, you know, launched a quick like micro project for the topic search thing. And that was cool. It felt good to just kind of knock that out. But yeah, you know, I'm just trying to make stuff, add them to my portfolio, trying to make stuff with as many buzzwords as I can. If that even, I mean, that goes against like everything we talk about in the show,
but I don't know that it actually does though, because if that's what your goal is right now, then using new tools to bake stuff is actually what you should be focused on. But if you have deadlines and you have an existing tech stack, then the probably less of a good idea. It really is all about context. And I think, I mean, that kind of brings us back to like, should sync exist in Vue? Should sync exist in any JavaScript framework? And it's like, well, I mean, how could I ever possibly say, no, it can't exist ever because it's just always a bad idea. There's so much context. There's so much other information around any of these decisions, whether that's choosing tools or choosing what things to put in a tool, that it seems short-sighted to me to say this is the correct way.
Yeah.
Because every time we say that, styles and tastes change in what is correct in tooling. I mean, something like utility classes, I'm just going to call this that type of CSS utility classes.
Sure.
A few years ago was ridiculous. Like people thought that was absurd, but as JavaScript changed and as single page apps changed, it made utility classes much more viable. It made them actually a great way to work in some cases. And as other technologies continue to evolve and change, and as people think about these problems more, that's probably going to change again. And so it seems weird to me that people would say like we're just going to remove this because it's not the fashion as of right now.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I really don't envy the position that, you know, core team members are in with Vue and React and X popular library, you know, because there's so many people that are kind of pushing their opinions on them. So for example, today I was looking through the Vue.js forums, and it was funny because I got a digest email and it was a hot mess of just like people being aggressive in their forum posts, like this is broken, and you know, and the staff are trying to be as nice as they can, like, oh, it's not really broken, you know, you didn't do this right, or that's not how this thing works. And it's just, I don't know, I guess that you can kind of like apply that to the entire like open source community of maintainers, people that maintain software. I really feel for them. And this morning I'm feeling even more because I was reading through that and I was like, man, makes me like, so I could have answered some of the questions, but I didn't feel like I wanted to just because of the climate of those threads.
Yeah, that's unfortunately very common. I mean, you see that all the time in GitHub issues. People are like, oh, your stupid library is broken. It's the worst. And it's like, no, you just didn't read even the first paragraph of the README. Like that happens so often. I think anybody who's had even a tiny bit successful open source project knows exactly what kind of issue I'm talking about there, where the person just comes in and is like, I tried to do this thing. It's like, that's not even valid JavaScript syntax. You didn't even, what is this? I don't even know what I'm looking at right now. And you didn't put it in a code fence. And it is tough. I mean, right. It's hard. And I'm certainly not saying that anybody on the Vue team made a mistake in doing this. I guess I'm more just wondering something, you know?
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. Just wondering why. I totally get it. And what the interesting thing is that it brings me back to something you said to me maybe last week or earlier this week, is something that you just messaged me offhand and said, I love having tests. And then you linked me to an issue I thought it was just awesome. Cause it was basically the same thing. Like, you had a bunch of tests written and then you're like, hey, this isn't, you know, instead of you like testing a bunch of things, instead of you having to go through and sanity check yourself against this use case, you just ran your test and then you noticed that the example they provided wasn't valid.
Yeah. Yeah. So to give a bit more context around that, one of my favorite things about having a good test suite, especially for open source projects, is that if someone files a bug, if it's in the test suite, you can instantly verify whether the bug is something else on their end or whether it is actually something going on with your code. And you can say, okay, here is the actual test that shows that is working. So I'm going to need more context around what's happening there. And it's such a huge time saver. Oh my God. Tests for open source software, the best.
Little side note, but I don't know why that popped into your brain, but I thought that was cool and relevant. But yeah, I recently have been using VS Code like we were talking about, and I made an existing .vue file plugin, and I made one that wasn't quite as buggy, but it still has bugs. And so basically I was scared that I was going to get dragged through the mud like the other Vue file author. And so what I did was I just wrote a giant disclaimer twice in the README saying, hey, this is not my fault. In fact, we're waiting on a pull request into VS Code for this to work. Again, it is not my fault. Here's where you can find the issue where we diagnose the problem. And I'm just like trying to avoid like all these like, you know, one-star reviews and just, you know what I mean? Just kind of like getting direct through it for putting something out there for people to use.
Can you imagine if there was a review section on GitHub for open source stuff?
I can't.
Oh my God.
I can't even imagine.
Oh my God.
I literally can't even imagine that.
I literally can't even.
I should probably check my reviews actually now that I think about it.
Are we done? I think we're done, right?
Yeah, probably.
Remember to come say hi to Sean and I in the Spec Slack. You can sign up today by visiting spec.fm/slack.
I'm scared to look at this right now. Visual Studio Code.